everybody. This is Soccer Chat. It's a great podcast for you to listen to other coaches just kind of talk shop. And it's also a great chance for you to get online and connect with our massive network. If you follow us over at Chat Soccer, no E, so that's SOCCR on all platforms. We put this podcast out for you when we're in our off season. And, you know, we've got some great friends that help us out, like our friends over at the Dutig brand. It's a podcast that you can't see, but I am rocking my all black murdered out Dutig hat. Nick can attest to it. He sees it on the screen. The all black snapback, we're rocking it. Check them out at dutigbrand.com. And when you're there, find something you like, whether it's a coaching notebook, maybe it's a hat, maybe it's a shirt, maybe it's one of Gary Kerning's books, or there's some other books that are on there as well. You know, find your coaching accessories that you're looking for and get them. Why? Because we can hook you up with a great discount. Use the promo code SOCCERCHAT whenever you check out and get yourself a sweet discount over at dutigbrand.com. Shout out to our friends at Exact Sports, the best soccer ID camps in the country. Go check them out. It's the place where you're going to get the most amount of exposure for what you're wanting to do. You know, the upcoming summer academic 50 camps are coming up, where there's always going to be 50 coaches at all of those. And guess what? Your boy's back at all of them again this year. We're bringing the summer tour back. The loop is coming back. Although there is one that is currently in question, but I'm trying to see if I can at least make it for a day and a half, because we got to bring the loop back. I didn't get to do it last year. I'm itching at it. But go check them out. Exactsports.com for your player at home who's looking to try to get themselves playing in college. He's Nick. I'm Sean. Nick, you probably can't tell us right now, but I don't know why, but I am super jacked up on a Wednesday night.
That, I mean, honestly, like, does it even matter why you are, you know?
I don't think it does matter. And to be honest with you, I don't think I could tell you why it is, because I don't know what the reasoning would be. I should be upset, because you'll hear in the episode, like, I did work a lot today. And I was going to reward myself with a round of golf afterwards. And instead of going golfing, because the AT&T cell tower was out here in Lawrence, Kansas, I didn't have, I was trying to like call my wife, and I was like, oh crap, like I can't make a call because it's on SOS. So I did what any other person would do instead of going golfing. I stopped at the local wing joint for Wing Wednesday and got connected to the Wi-Fi and chatted with all the people and catch up on the messages that I may have missed on my way home instead. So I was like, you know what? If there's no golf day, let's eat some good food before doing the soccer chat with Nick.
I love it. And I love the fact that I'm going to get to see you next weekend.
Absolutely. We completely forgot to bring that up. I was going to be like, oh, hey, by the way, you got to come.
Yeah, I'm going to surprise him. Like, we shouldn't tell us unless he listens to this episode. Just tell him not to listen to the intro.
Nate, because just give Nate a disclaimer right now to like stop listening.
Yeah, right now.
Nate, I know you're probably still listening. So like fast forward 30 minutes. And there you go. No, it'll be cool. That's what Nate and I were talking about the other day. And he was like, oh, he's like, you know, how often do you see Nick? And I was like, once a year, twice a year, something like that. Yep. And he was just like, that's so incredible. I was like, well, I told him to come to our game since we're going to my first time in Minnesota. Super pumped.
Dude, the U of M field's pretty sick too. Like, I think you guys are going to have a good time there.
We get in the night before. So I may give you the deets on where we're at and whatnot. And how far are you from there?
2 hours, but it's not like that. Okay. It's like very like highway the whole way.
Kelly, I don't know if you've heard of Nick's plan yet for next weekend or not. So, I know you listen to all.
She is not coming. She will be out of town.
I know, but who's watching the kids?
She's taking the kids.
Oh, thank you, Kelly. Yes. You're the best.
No, she is. So I have to, we all have second duties as D3 schools, and, I have baseball on Saturday, but, because I have that like all day, then she's going to take the kids out of town to go do something back home. So
No, you did hockey, right?
I did lacrosse at Monmouth and then hockey when I first got here, and now I'm on baseball. So
which one's your favorite so far?
Oh gosh. hockey, for the fact that no hockey games ever get canceled and rescheduled. Baseball and lacrosse games because of outdoor weather, and like the spring has way worse weather in the fall. Like, I don't feel like I'm going to jinx it, but like, we don't typically have to reschedule our games.
No. I can remember that when I was at Brescia, it felt like I remember our baseball coach one day being like, I hate even doing a schedule before the season. He's like, 'cause it always changes.
Yeah. So I would say it's probably baseball, softball is probably my least favorite, just because like today I was like, literally we're supposed to be working today and like got canceled and moved to tomorrow. So you have to figure out how to who's picking up the kids from daycare and what are you doing for dinner? And yeah, I would say hockey, even though like it's always Friday, Saturday night, but it's Friday, Saturday night for 2 months and you just know that it's going to be that and it's done. So definitely hockey.
Start a petition. Let's get Nick back on the hockey. I'm sure the hockey team would love to have Nick back. So we got to, all right, St. Mary's, listen up, y'all.
You would appreciate this, Sean. I've been really working on this. So baseball this year and softball, they always had an announcer for like the walk-up songs, like, and coming up to the plate, blah, blah, blah. And they lost that person this year. And because I was working and like, once the game happens, like I don't really have a lot to do. So I have been the one that has actually been on the,
you're the MC.
Oh yeah. Like I have a lot of fun with it. I think like our years and years of doing this podcast has made me a lot more comfortable in front of a microphone. So I have a lot of fun with it. You know, like we got two down, two up, like it's a, like I have a lot of fun with it.
Do you do like, cause you're the Cardinals, right? Cardinal?
Yes. No.
Yeah. Are you one of those like Cardinal fans, get on your feet?
You know, my big one is right in the beginning of the game. It's like, let's play Cardinal baseball.
How's that not been like a TikTok video of you yet?
I mean, they got me singing the seventh inning stretch a little bit ago, but that was.
Oh, look at you, Harry Carey.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I do the seventh inning stretch everything.
Oh, my goodness. I bet like you may find your new career.
I've said to Kelly multiple times that like, I think my retirement job is I don't want to do that. I want to commentate sports. Like, I just want to watch like basketball or soccer games and just like commentate them.
Yeah. I think it'd be like, I think something that would be cool would be, and I've always thought that this is like having a show. And now that I say it out loud, it's probably, it sounds super stupid, but like, okay, like we're soccer coaches, but granted, we also are sports fans or fans of other sports, but like, okay, we've got soccer coaches who are watching a football game and like commentating about it. We've got a soccer game with baseball coaches talking about, you know, like, because that's the thing like I've enjoyed about like our guest who's going to be on with us, watching sports with him, like he watches in such like a really cool microscope.
Yeah.
And you know, in the way that he, and it like makes me think about the way that I watch other sports. And it's one of those things where like, if you might be like super knowledgeable of one sport, but if you can take little things like as a coach that you can like pick apart from another, that like, you know, you can just see the game in a completely different way. So yeah, maybe that's our like retirement venture is we start like an online sports show where we just like commentate.
Bring other sports to comment. Like it was like, do you remember back in the day when they used to like let the fans come in and commentate like the Premier League games?
Yeah.
Yeah, like we could do that, but just we'll do it cross sports and we'll be like, someone will be like watching a soccer game and be like, and the Jayhawks are on the forecheck. And then, you know, I'd be like, people who watch a lot of sports be like, I mean, that's not the term that we use in soccer, but I totally understand what you're saying.
I think that like, if somebody would give us the platform, maybe like a YouTube channel or something, I think we could surpass Pat McAfee's show as the dumbest show of all time, but like one that people would tune in to watch.
That's going to be, again, like we're going to set that as a goal. Like to, that's
speaking into existence, you know?
Yes. not for 2024 though. Like if we're 2034, that'll be like our we're probably, neither of us are retiring by 2034, 2044. That's our venture.
So Nick, if, let's say some like big time, multi-million $1 billion sports company calls us next week and are like, hey, we're gonna give you guys a live microphone on YouTube every single Monday through Friday, just talk about whatever you want, and the deal is sweet because you know I'm going to negotiate a really good deal for
it. Yeah, I mean Avery would take over the Cardinals tomorrow and we would go do that.
We have to think about what that would be called. I feel like we could do like a cool run of that in the summertime at some point. I did have visions today. I don't know why I was thinking about this. I was like leaving my apartment this morning and I had visions of like, I was thinking of like the McAfee shows, like the others that do like the live from the Super Bowl. And I'm like, we've got to do like a lot, like legit live from convention. Like just get like, try to find a way to get like a couple of like iPads or whatever to be able to shoot and just like have at it for a day. And just like, whatever happens, happens.
I think that'd be phenomenal. And again, it being in Chicago, we have a lot of places to store stuff. Like I have family there. Like we could make this happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I cannot wait. So we've got a really cool guest on today, and no, he's not paying me to say that. It actually is really, really true. He's been a friend of the show for a long time. Somebody that I've been happy to know for a while now. And it's kind of funny because he nor I can actually pinpoint the year that we first met. We both believe it was around the time. So, his oldest, I think, is a year older than Quinn. And I think his middle is the same age as Quinn. And that's around the time that I met him. So we think it's around 9 to 10 years. We cannot confirm, but that's what we're going with. But I'm so excited to let you all, get to see the guy that I get to see every single day of the week. And he's been, so gracious and nice to me and my family. And I know we're all kind of learning about what this Jayhawk Nation Rock Chalk is all about, because we have with us from the University of Kansas, it's that D-O-double-G. Nate Lee's coming up right after this. Well, he just drove off sometimes like the king. I ran my mouth off a bit too much of what did I say. Well, you just laughed it off, it was all okay. Illustrious guest every time that we have soccer chat, and the fact that, Nick, we've mentioned this guy's name on many of episodes, and I still feel like at some point, like, we had him on for like 5 minutes during like one of our camp shows. I could be, yes. I could be wrong, but I feel like it's happened. But this show specifically has probably been about 3 months in the making, because when he got his new job, I think I had reached out, like, all right, we got to get you on the show now. And through some connections, we were able to make it happen, but it's not every day that you get to hang out and chat with who I believe is one of the best in the business. One of the top guys out there. He's a dog, let's just say it for what it is. We've got, every time I see this guy every single day, the first vision in my head, he doesn't know this, but in my head, I start singing la di da di da. We have with us University of Kansas head coach, Nate Lee. Thanks for coming on, Nate.
All right. Sean's clapping for me in the background. So I'll take a Snoop Dogg intro any day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kind of the cool thing is, like, with soccer chat is it kind of gets everybody to know the journeys that you've been on to get to where you are. And obviously, as somebody who's known you for a while and kind of seen, the places you've been and how you got to where it's at, for a lot of us who know you, like, this really wasn't a surprise that, like, something like this would come along at some point. But for those that maybe don't know who Nate Dogg is, kind of take us through how you got to where you're at now.
Yeah, and I've been on a podcast or two recently, and so hopefully no one's sick of hearing my story. I'll try to change it up a little bit, but
those podcasts don't matter.
This is the one. I've saved all my good material for this one. My coaching journey started later than most or than some. And so I had like a little life and a little career before I did the coaching thing. I was in finance for two different stints, about 6 years. And I actually spent 2 years doing full-time community service with AmeriCorps, which I just told someone the other day was like the best 2 years of my life. But it all led to me kind of cracking into this business at 30. And any advice that, if when people ask me for advice on how to get started or how to move forward and advance their career, like, the first thing I go to is just connections, right? Like, make a network, expand your network, have people you can call for advice, have people you can call for a favor. And so I got my first job because the coach I played for, a dude named Bobby Kramig, flipped over from the men's side to the women's side at Miami University, Miami of Ohio, and gave me a job, gave me a shot when my soccer resume was absolutely blank, had never coached a day in my life. And we had spoken for a couple of years about my interest in this, and he's like, you'll probably have to go GA and volunteer. And that's my advice to people now. Like, you got to get in, right? And then once you get in, you can make of it what you will. My in and my luck kind of came with, I knew a guy, and he believed in me as a person and was willing to take a risk on me and hired me as a full-time assistant coach with no experience. I've told this story before, but, like, to the point where my resume and my hiring got flagged by HR that they tried to say I didn't meet the job description that he had used for like 25 years straight, the same one. And so we finally figured it out and all that stuff. But yeah. And then like he was towards the back half of his career. He retired, you know, a set of years ago, and is very empowering as a head coach and gave a lot of responsibilities to assistants. So on day one, he's like, "Hey, you're the recruiting coordinator." And I said, "Okay, what do I do with that?" And he goes, "You're smart,
what
dude.
What does
like,
that
figure
mean?"
It out. Yeah. Yeah. And he's like, you know, we have a kind of a database here and this, but like, he's like, "I hired you for a reason. You know, I think you can do this." And essentially, I mean, honestly, like pretty much you're a smart guy, figure it out. And so that was pretty empowering. And, you know, I just ran with it. And then you know, I was the deep second assistant, right? Like the first assistant was a guy named Shane Meredith, if you know
him.
Oh,
I know Shane.
Yeah, Shane's a great guy, super experienced, been in the business for a long time. You know, ran a lot of the training, had a lot of the experience. You know, my first 3 months was just like attaching myself to his hip, asking him tons of questions, saying, "Is this, you know, like, can I try this?" And he's like, "Sure." You know, he's a great guy. Still keep in touch with him. But he left to take a job at the University of Iowa, like, for the fall season. I was hired April 2009. I think Shane left probably June or July 2009. And so then I was like de facto first assistant 2 months into coaching the day. And yeah, I mean, like, again, that, the person that was hired, Gary Grant, was another kind of person with way more experience. And so I still learned way more from him than he learned from me, but it allowed me to probably get more responsibility in a lot of different facets of the program, right away. And I think like I made most of people knew me early on, probably through recruiting. That was where I just went out and recruited like crazy. You know, got a lot of people on campus. Some of the players that we had come to Miami ended up kind of hitting it big pretty early on. One of them, Katie Dolish, Katie Edelman, who then came to work with us at Xavier like 8 years later or whatever it is. And so as like time went on, I started getting a couple opportunities and pretty good ones right away for recruiting side of things. And 4 years in, so just after the 2012 season, Neil Stafford, who was the head coach of Central Michigan at the time, we had just played Central Michigan and Miami had just played in the MAC final. We had just gone 1-2 to the last day of the regular season in the MAC. And when he got the job at University of Cincinnati, he called and he's like, "I want you to come in as my recruiting coordinator." You know, my wife, Emily's from Cincinnati, like Miami's my alma mater. I loved it so much. And we had an unbelievable team. We went 20-2 that year, and won the MAC regular season. We won the MAC tournament. We beat Tennessee in the NCAA tournament. That was a loaded team. But I thought it was like the right thing to do at the right time. And, you know, it's one of those things, like there's never a good time to leave. And, you know, even reflecting on a couple months ago with the Xavier thing, it was brutal, brutal leaving that group, and that school, but it's supposed to be hard, right? If you do a good job and you make relationships. So I joined Neil, and the third part person in our staff is a living legend himself, Gary Kernin, if you guys know him.
Yes, the Gary Kernin Network.
Yeah. So if anyone has podcast fatigue of Coach Nate here, Gary's part of it, because I've been on with him a few times. But yeah, like Gary was writing his first book during that first season at UC. You know, we were taking over a program that had really struggled, and Neil was a great leader to turn that around. And I was with them for 4 years, the last three and a half or so being associate head coach, still recruiting coordinator. You know, by my last couple years at UC, I was 6-8 years in. I touched pretty much a lot of things in the program, right? Like both him and Bobby empowered me to have a lot of autonomy in a lot of places, and like, you know, take the lead on with administratively. And so I felt I was ready to take on the challenge of being a head coach. But like, I was trying to, you know, thread the needle of doing that and not having to move my family, because we hadn't had to from Miami to UC, and, tried to stay patient with that. And a bunch of times it looked like it wasn't going to work, and had those long conversations with my wife about what if that doesn't come, or what if it comes somewhere across the country. And we were patient, and finally that opportunity came at Xavier, and which is, for those of people who don't know, is 3 miles down the road from University of Cincinnati. And so the house I was living in, we stayed in, when I actually got the call from my athletic director that I was getting the job, I was driving home from work from University of Cincinnati, and I passed Xavier on the way back. And I was like, literally like, he's like, we got to sign papers. It was Mother's Day of 2017. And he's like, you want to come in and sign papers? And I'm like, Greg, like, I am 1 minute from campus. And so I literally detoured about a quarter mile, drove onto campus. I was wearing a UC polo. He met me at my car with a Xavier polo, and got my first head coaching shot May of 2017. And for like, one of those lessons I talk about, like that I've learned through the years, is I was a finalist for that job. December 2016, there was an opening at Xavier, and I was in the final group of two or three, and they actually chose a different candidate. And Casey White, if anyone knows, and Casey's, you know, super qualified. She was with the national team. And so she was hired ahead of me. And, you know, like, it's no fun, right? Like, that was the one, because it was allowing me to stay in town and put a lot of time and effort, and, you know, called on all my contacts to, like, they probably got annoyed at Xavier how many people might've called on my behalf. But yeah, like, you can handle that one of two ways. You can, you know, be bitter and burn down the house, or you can take it, you know, take it on the chin and be professional and, you know, move on. And thankfully I took the latter part and got feedback from Greg, and hopefully didn't ruin that relationship. So then when Casey took a job with the national team a few months later, you know, she never coached a game at Xavier. I was still a candidate. And I even remember when I found out that she was resigning, it's like, do I wait for them to call me? Possibly. They probably know I'm interested. And I've received great advice from, I'm gonna shout out one of my friends, Tommy G. Tommy G is like the announcer at FC Cincinnati, does all their TV stuff, and his media company does all their stuff. He's like, dude, like, call, you know, what can it hurt? I remember having that conversation with him. And so, like, honestly, probably 20 minutes after Casey resigned, before the news was public, I called who came to be my boss, Brian Hicks. And I was like, I don't know if you guys would still be interested in me, but in case you were, like, I'm interested in the job. And, you know, a month later or so, I got hired and had 6 great years at Xavier, really enjoyed it. Great people. Felt like we built that program into something that I'm very proud of. And I think they'll continue to have a ton of success. But this opportunity came kind of after this fall season. And it was one that I felt like I couldn't pass up. It was, you know, a lot of the things that we were looking for as a family. And if there was ever going to be an opportunity that was going to take me away from, like, Cincinnati and Xavier, like a great institution, a great program, and then the city we loved, it had to be a different kind of opportunity, and that's how we view this one at KU.
At what point did you realize that, like, the office life of working in finance was not for you?
Pretty early on. So, like, I was doing investment banking stuff, and so for anyone who doesn't kind of know that lifestyle, it's pretty brutal, right? It's 60, 80, 100, 120 hours a week, depending on what deal you were working on and depending on who your boss was. And there were some really cool things, right? Like, you know, like deals that we were working on were on the cover of the Wall Street Journal, and I could show my parents and I felt like I'd made it. And, you know, you were flying on private jets and you were doing, like, this was back in the day before all the reforms of, like, really extravagant, like, expense card dinners and, like, corporate retreats and all that stuff. And for a 22-year-old who didn't grow up like that, like, there were a lot of really awesome things about that. It was a challenging job that, like, you learned and had to use your brain and, like, had to make relationships. But I think what I learned was the people who did really well in that role, like, that I was like this analyst, and, you know, everything is about, like, making it to the next level, making it to the next level, like, working for a bonus. All the people did really well, like, loved their work and could get totally behind it and just wanted more of it. And I just didn't have that passion toward it. I think the other thing was they held up people who had kind of worked their way up to different levels as sort of examples of, if you work super hard and pretty much like, you know, throw away your life for a couple of years. Like you can be this person. And they were successful and they were like, you know, made a ton of money and they drove nice cars and all that. So we were living in Chicago and their houses were great, but like, they didn't seem particularly happy. They didn't seem to have necessarily most of them, like the healthiest home lives. They didn't seem to treat people incredibly well. And so like, you know, there were some really good people at the bank, but I didn't have the goal to, I didn't have a role model that I was like, I want to be like them, you know? And if you're going to do a job like that, that takes that kind of dedication and commitment, you have to have a why behind it. And money wasn't like enough of a why for me. So I found that out pretty early. I held on for 2 years because that's like the threshold that you can do to set yourself up for the next step. And I wanted to have those options. Right. And so I guess another thing I would tell people is, you know, there is a sense of sticking it out for a certain amount of time that as long as you can kind of figure out like the payoff for that. But so I stayed for 2 years, but I probably knew like 6 months in that it wasn't the greatest for me. Yeah.
What part of Chicago were you in?
The bank was down by the Board of Trade.
Okay.
LaSalle and Jackson. I lived in Lincoln Park.
Okay, nice.
Which was great. And like, that's where all the Miami finance bros like went. So yeah. Like all my boys were there and it was like the extension of college.
Well, it's funny because so I'm Chicago suburbs and a lot of people from my high school, we were like a very preppy high school, went to Miami, like Ohio. Yes. Like it's a very, like I remember like the people are going there, like it's like that back in the day, like that was like the very time for like wearing like double polos and things like that. Those were the Miami.
There are no pictures of me in double polos, but you were spot on with your assessment. It was called, back in the day, they called it J. Crew U. I don't think that would have the same resonance now. I don't know if people know that anymore.
No, it was like, again, like colleges graduate, you know, like they change their reputation a little bit after time. But no, one of the things I'm curious about, especially like with you getting into coaching and things like that, like what were some of the things that you did education wise for yourself? Obviously, like your initial role, like you said, was like recruiting coordinator. But like, what were some things that you kind of did on your own to like get back into the soccer world, to get like re-ingrained with all of the things? Or were you always kind of a person that was like, even though you weren't in the soccer world, still following along with it a lot? Like kind of talk us through that.
Yeah. I mean, awesome question. Like I was a fan, you know, but like there are people who are way, way bigger soccer fans than me. And I wasn't looking at it through the lens of like a coach or anything like that. So when I stopped playing soccer competitively, it was still mostly sweeper stopper.
Yep.
Most places. And it was still pretty much like 4-4-2 everywhere. I know when I started playing in men's leagues a little bit later, that's when like 4-3-3 became bigger and a flat back four, but I wasn't like hip to those like changes. And so, yeah, like when I started in 2009, I was way behind, way, way, way behind. I think in certain ways that's a limitation. I think in certain ways it's honestly the best thing that ever happened to me because I could look at the game like, since you're not immersed in it for like 8 or 9 years, you can enter it with a fresh perspective and not be biased by, you know, most coaches are essentially like, if I would have coached right after college, I would have done just what Bobby did with us. Mm-hmm. Right. Whether I thought it made sense or not, like, it's just kind of like what you do. And so I was able to enter with a fresh lens of like, okay, the game has evolved. How has it evolved? And like, what, like, where's my place in it? And what sort of like inefficiencies are there? Or like, what are people doing that don't seem to make sense for me? So there's that side of my brain. And then there's the other side of the brain of like, well, I need to know what I'm talking about too. And I don't. So one of the best things that happened to me was Bobby Kramig was super big on coach education for his assistant coaches. He's just great as it relates to like development of coaches, caring about them, and then alum. A lot of things that like I've stolen from him or model like our program after him. But his big things were always go to convention, right? Like it's built into the budget that our whole coaching staff goes to convention. I don't know if you remember this, like they used to have a tournament in conjunction with the Final Four. So it was at Cary, Raleigh for a while.
Yep.
There was one year it was at Texas A&M. There was one year it was at Kennesaw State in Georgia. And so Bobby, the other thing was like, we're always going to the Final Four. And all three of us would go. And this is back in the day when you can only do two coaches recruit. And so me and the other assistant would recruit all day. And Bobby would just sit in the hotel room and drink beers. And then at like 7 o'clock, he's like, all right, boys, you ready to go to the game? And we've been out at the field for, you know, 11 hours. And half that time that's freezing. It's in December. And so we'd come back and we'd be like, coach, like, you know, we just want to like go to sleep or warm up. And he's like, you know, I don't know what kind of podcast this is, so I won't use his language, but he's like, stop being blank, like you're going. So that was awesome because
I think convention... Nick just took notes of what he's going to start doing with his assistants. They're all going to go out recruiting. And
yeah, you're going to make up a recruiting rule that you can't do it. So you just drink beers and hang out. And then, so like convention, he knows, like Bobby was like, you know, an OG and got his A license, like with all the guys who like wrote the books, the Sam Snows of the world and those guys. And like, so we'd go and I'd be hanging out with them. You know, we had plenty of fun at night, but during the day, I was like, I was planning out my entire days and I was going to sessions and all the time. And mostly back then, field sessions. Like I hardly go to field sessions now, but back then it's like, I can't run a session. I don't know what I'm doing. And so the more that I could see was great. And so Bobby supporting that, you know, I probably couldn't have afforded to do that on my own. And then he also like supported us getting licenses. And so I went up through the NSCA side or now the mm-hmm. United Soccer Coaches side. Back then you can like switch over from, you know, whatever your national, advanced national, whatever to like, I think you used to be able to go premier into the B. And yep. then as I was getting my premier, they're like, you can't do it anymore. And so I don't have any of my, my US soccer licenses, but I have all the stuff from United Soccer Coaches, but like that all happened early in my career. And then the other thing I'd say is like, I surrounded myself, whether it was intentionally or not, around a lot of smart people who are now doing really big things in the game, right? We're way more educated on this kind of stuff, like tactically and all that. And we hung out, man, you know, and like we picked each other's brain. And so even if we were going to dinner and having a good time and, you know, having a few beers along the way, there was a lot of like formal and informal soccer talk and how we do it in recruiting and, you know, what we do. This was a lot of us were assistant coaches, like what we do as a head coach. And, you know, we even like a couple of us like actually formed this, like, I don't know, secret society is taking it a little far, but like little subgroup that we did, like
it's a gang
education together. And yeah, I don't know. So again, I was fortunate, like so much of what we end up doing with our lives are like who we're surrounded by and the influence they have on us. And so, yeah, some of it was intentional. Some of it was luck. And then some of it, like, again, like the coaches, Neil and Bobby both gave me a lot of rope to try new things. You know, that part of my brain that when I was deciding what to do next, like consulting was one of them. And I think like my brain is pretty wired decently for consulting of like, if there's sort of this quote unquote problem, or if you're looking for a solution, like how do you kind of go about trying to find the best one or a better one or a different one? And I've never been afraid to try different things, even if kind of like flew in the face of convention. And so there was like kind of this big mixture, and just, I was super lucky that I was around people that let me kind of try some of that stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah, no. And I think that's a really cool way to show that not every path is the same. Cause obviously there's other people that have gotten to where you're at coaching Power Five schools that have had a completely different journey. And I think that that's really cool because it just shows that there's no one right way to do this and one right way to
get
there.
One of us.
But yeah, I think the other thing, it's funny, like you brought, it was funny. I actually got called to take over. I think it was a WPSL team this summer. They're like, hey, will you come be the head coach? I was like, yeah, for sure. They're like, what license do you have? I was like, oh, I have my premier and I have my C. And they're like, no, you need a B, need to be working on your A. And I was like, well, are you going to pay for it? I was like, I don't know if the salary benefit is going to outweigh that stuff. So I also hate that there's like certain gatekeeping in the country for those things, but that's a different topic for a different day. One of the things that I found super interesting about your resume and everything like that is
Nick does his research.
He does. Yeah. I like, you haven't had a bad year as a head coach yet. Like, what do you think that like,
you better knock on wood right now, Nick Rizzo. Thank you.
I got a chair right there. But like more so, I think that's especially when you take over a new program. I think it's difficult because there's obviously going to be naturally, like I always tell people, when you take over a new program, the most turnover that's going to happen is in the first 2 years. You're going to have a lot of people that are going to buy in and are going to be ready to go. And you're going to have other people that decide for one reason or another, it's not the right path. And unfortunately, sometimes you have to decide that it's not the right path for those people. And so even with turnover, it still seems like you were able to do some really good things. What do you think were some of the things that you would give advice to coaches taking over a new program and trying to maintain success through that process?
Yeah. Well, first, for all the fact checkers out there, we did have one off season.
COVID is, doesn't count.
It's the COVID year. So yeah. Even when we like,
you did have a bad COVID year, but yeah. It had an asterisk already by it. So I didn't count it.
Yeah. We, all of our marketing materials, we were like, avoid, you know, we kind of conveniently took out the COVID year. And I think it's fair, but at least let's put it out there.
I mean, it was what, 6 games or 8 games. It's like, it's not a full season.
Yeah. So, I think teams that I've been a part of, and that I've had influence on, have an identity. And I think my advice to someone taking over a program would be whatever, it doesn't have to be my identity or what I prefer. It probably has to fit with your natural coaching style and what you like to coach and what you care about and what you value. But if I can pat myself on the back a little bit, like the interview materials I had when I interviewed for Xavier, and I said, this is my vision and this is what we're going to be known as, identity wise. And this is what we will be best in class. This is what we'll be best in the Big East in sooner than later. Were things that we were able to accomplish pretty much, you know, to the bullet point. And it's because I believed in it. I'm wired that way. Right. And so again, like, as far as, you know, being yourself and authentic, having answers to questions, right? So like, if you're part of a transition and things are new, human nature is a little bit resistant to change. And if you're asking for people to change, you better be able to explain the why, and you better be able to answer their questions. And not full of crap either, or not like real vague and evasive. If you can give them a straight answer, they can probably, whether they totally buy it or not, they're like, okay, I understand it. And then I'll give you a little bit of a chance. I think you have to create buy-in, and that's an incredibly challenging thing. And it's something that we're, you know, still in the process of working on here at KU. And it's going to be a 2-3-5 year every day kind of thing. But yeah, there's that weird mix is like, you know how you want to play and you might not be able to play that way day one. And so do you still do it and maybe not get results? Do you go for results but then at the potential risk of not having an identity and then trying to do it 2 or 3 years down the road? And my personal belief is, you know, you might not be able to do everything 100% how you want to, but I would lean towards doing it how you want to within the identity and the framework that you want. And, you know, like believe in your program and believe in the players and don't assume they can't do it. And don't, you know, waste away years, like being like, I can't wait for 2 years from now when this or that's going to be different. Invest fully and deeply and see what happens. Right. And so we got off to a really rocky start at Xavier, like really rocky. We lost some games that, like, you know, I don't like that they're in public record. But I'll tell you what, the turning point for me in that first year at Xavier was off a really bad loss because we didn't have the buy-in of the older players. Like, this is no like shot at them. They tried to hire the assistant coach. And then when I got hired, like someone on the Zoom, in my introductory Zoom to the Xavier team, someone, when they thought everyone had hung up, was like, well, that effing sucks. And I heard it, you know, and it's like, oh, no. Great start. And it's like, they didn't do anything wrong, right? Like they banded together to try to get someone hired. And when I was an assistant coach, man, like that's what I hope people would have done for me, you know? And so we were fighting buy-in the first five, and I got hired in the summer. So we didn't have a spring. We went right in, and we needed like something bad to happen where the players weren't doing what we were asking. And so whether you say it explicitly or whether you kind of look at them and kind of go like, see what I'm talking about? Like, it matters. Like, you don't have to go with a heavy hammer if I told you so. You kind of just look at them and they're like, all right, we'll give it a shot. Like how you asked. And so that first group, like at Xavier, I probably have more affection for than any group we worked with. I probably have some of the deepest relationships, even some that like we only coached for one season, because it was just like this beautiful mess and we figured it out together. And there's nothing like a chip on the shoulder. There's nothing like, you know, pulling off upsets. And like, I really deeply believe that those players understand how much they set the foundation for the future, you know, and they'd come back. When we played at Tennessee 2 years ago in the NCAA tournament, a bunch of those kids drove 4, 6, 8 hours to be at that game. And, you know, like they, when we won, it was like, you could tell they felt like they won, and they did. Right. So man, I totally went off brand on your question, but I think it's like, don't sell yourself short. Don't wish away the time. Like, I invest every day in your identity.
I like it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And again, I feel like that's like the fun thing about like taking over a team, and like, there's so many new things that you got to figure out, and you get to like, I'm sure you're a human being who coaches soccer, so you probably watched Ted Lasso at some point.
Of course.
Yeah. And like, I don't know, it's just like a lot of the opening scenes that end up paying off at the end, but just like, man, they don't like us now. Wait till you find out when we win them over and stuff like that. And I think that that's a lot of the fun part about taking over a program is going through that journey with people who may not know anything about you, may not have even wanted you as coach, but if you do it the right way and you do it as a good person, you find a way to like win them over, and it becomes a pretty special journey together.
Yeah. And the coaches too, right? Like, that group that first year, man, like, do you guys know Vince Gentile? He's back with Scott Gallagher, but he was a King's Hammer. He was with us for one season. And Vince is like, you know, we played at SLU this last fall, and he came and hung out at the hotel a couple nights. And like Kelsey Hunyadi, we were together from day one for like 3 or 4 years. And, you know, when I just drove back from Cincinnati to Kansas, we were on the phone for 2 hours the other day. And Taylor Spradling, our athletic trainer, JJ, like those were like incredibly important moments in my life and with those people. And, you know, we talk about it with teams. Like if you accomplish something that you feel is special, right? Not that other people outside identify as special. It's very rare and hard to replicate in other facets of life. So you have this kind of like lifelong bond that you went through something together, whether it was 3, 6 months or whether it ends up being 10 years, you know, it's really cool.
I want you to kind of talk about, I've said this to like some friends of mine, is I don't know that I've ever met a coach who like pregame or pre-training has more fun than you do. like it's, like one day I just like want to film it, because like, I mean, you're out there kicking around and kind of talk with everybody. For you, like, how much is that like an important part? And I know you said like, this is my chance to be a kid and do these things. So, you know, for coaches who are, you know, maybe a little bit too serious at times or things like that, like how important for you is to have that little bit of fun when you get the opportunity?
Yeah. I mean, we use the word balance a lot. I talk about balance in different ways, and that I try to find some semblance of it. I mean, you've seen me when I coach, there's not much messing around, and there's not much joking around, and I'm not very light, and like, we're probably coaching too much, maybe borderline every second of the session. And so, I have a compartmentalized, personality that like when it's on, I can't remove myself, and I can't not be serious. I can't not try to get the team better. But like off the field, like, yeah, I love the game. And you don't get to play it as much anymore. And like, we're so lucky that we have like 60 balls at our disposal, like perfect ones. We have this nice pitch, and, you know, the equipment manager hands me shoes, and you're around people who like the game. And yeah, it's always been something I've liked to do. You know, hopefully it doesn't come at the expense of the players thinking we're not taking it seriously or whatnot. It's certainly fun when, like, you know, Ty loves a good kick around. I've had like, you know, coaches who like it more than others. So like Tiffany Roberts, if anyone knows Tiffany Roberts, mm-hmm. You know, now coaching out in Phoenix, but she great player at Santa Clara. She was with us at UC one season and we do the kick around and she's, I'm not a very good ball striker. So she was like always 10 times better than me. And she laces a perfect one to me and then she has to go chase my balls. And same thing with Kristen Cannon. And, you know, like Kelsey did it for a while, but Kelsey got annoyed when I didn't kick it straight. So Tyler loves, he doesn't mind chasing it. Daniel doesn't mind chasing it, but yeah, no, I like it. I still feel, you know, as these numbers tick up and the hairline changes and all that stuff, like you get, I know I'm getting old. I can't see as well anymore, but like, I still feel pretty young for the time being. So have fun when we can, I guess.
I was telling Nate the other day, like we need to put a kickball team together because there's something about like, whenever, like if we're kicking around and like a perfect ball gets like played where it's just rolling or it's like a great, going to be a great volley. You can just see in Nate's face, like, I'm going to blast the crap out of this thing. Like, I don't care where it goes. I'm just going to hit it as hard as I can.
I always say, like, if you hear me yell, I always yell, like, no regrets to other people to empower them to hit the crap out of the ball. And I'll go chase it if you shank it because I shank plenty myself.
Yeah. I think the thing, like, I guess for me as a coach, like, it is kind of like that. I don't want to say calm before the storm, but it is kind of like a really nice, like, relaxed time, like right before you get into the serious part of your session. And I feel like that's something where, you know, in my career from assistant coaches and head coaches and things like that, like I've been able to tell a difference in like how that session goes as a coach based off, okay, what were we like before? If we had just come out of a meeting where it was basically, you know, to the grindstone and argumentative maybe. And like, also like you kind of see that at training as compared to, you know, at Kansas, it's like wrists out, you know, taking a piss at each other and striking the ball around and enjoying Daniel's new adult league stardom that he's just started. Like we always find something to kind of like hang on to. And I think the thing, like, just as like kind of somebody who like scans peripherals, like, I feel like our players like see that and it kind of makes them feel good of like, okay, like, hey, like these guys still enjoy this. And I still think that we'd have the greatest kickball team if we put one together. Nate's like, I'm not much of a kickball guy, but like, I want to kind of go over to our softball field and have a game. Cause I think Nate would just crank a bunch of homers. However, I will say, and I told Nick this on the last podcast, I would take our five coaches against any five coaches in the country together, like whatever staff group of five in a game of 5-on-5 basketball any day of the week and twice on Sunday.
We'd be okay. I'm not saying we'll beat everybody, but I think we could give most people a talk.
This is like, these are like legit conversations where we had, I think it was like our first week kind of everybody together. I was like, okay, like we need to play some pickup basketball. And I was like, so like, what's everybody's strength? And literally every single person was like, oh, I can pass the ball. Like we can't have five distributors. We're never going to score.
Ty is a chucker. Ty is not afraid of a shot.
Yeah.
I hear a lot about your basketball game. We'll see what it looks like. I can't score with my life unless I'm open. Daniel's got some mid-range game too. And he's got those wide shoulders. He can kind of like bully people around.
He would be like our short Zion. Without the jumping. For you kind of like talking about like the Kansas experience, you know, for you, you mentioned, and I'm not going to try to like pull the curtains back too much, but like, you know, you and I had conversations like right after you got it and whatnot, you know, obviously you mentioned like, it's going to take something special, you know, to leave where it was home for you and not so much like comfortable, but like where you felt, you know, good about where you were heading. Ultimately at the end of the day, you know, what was it about Kansas that made you say, you know what, like, this is the opportunity. I got to take this.
Yeah. Oh, I talked to my family before we did this and I promised I'd shout them out. So,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So, well, it's going to kind of go into the answer a little bit. Like my wife, Emily, you know, I've told a lot of people this, but she is as Cincinnati as they come. Like you don't get it. you know, both her parents were born there. She went to college at UC, grad school there. You know, has been there her whole life. Her parents are there. Her sisters are there. They each have three kids. And we lived in the perfect neighborhood. We sold our house, which was a traumatic experience, but like we have the best friends there. And yeah, like even on the soccer side, like sure, we all could want more and, you know, resources maybe were becoming a little bit of an issue, but like we could have kept rolling for a while, I think. And again, I think they will. And so, yeah, like there have been some potential opportunities that have come potentially my way in the last set of times and have talked to a few people. And we kind of set like a couple sort of non-negotiables, you know. One is a place that we thought we could raise a family. And I think we both lean Midwest, right? I'm from Ohio as well. And, you know, Kansas
big
is different
Cleveland
than Ohio.
Guy. Big Cleveland
yeah, man.
Guy.
Yeah, man. Shout out, like, Cleveland pride all over the place, right? and there's a lot of us running around in these soccer circles, like sneaking them out. And we always have that bond. But like the people in Kansas, the people in Lawrence remind me of the people that I've always gravitated towards in my life. And there's just a kindness and a welcoming and all that stuff that I'm pretty confident that that our family will be able to assimilate, you know, culturally pretty quickly. There's probably a reckoning coming in college athletics where there is going to be some sort of split maybe between the haves and the have nots. And that might be a little bit more like literal, or it might be a little bit more like in essence, but I feel like the resource gap is going to continue to grow if I had to guess. And so, you know, we felt like we were running a little bit uphill at Xavier of like out punching our weight, and that there's something novel about it. And there's something really like you take a lot of pride in, but it's also kind of exhausting. And you sometimes have to look at the bigger picture. And so being in a conference that you thought would be on the right side of things certainly doesn't hurt. But like, here's the thing, like I would never go to a place I didn't think we can win and win early and win big. And that was going to be a huge part of the driving factor. And so the lens I was looking at any potential opportunity, it was like, can you win here? And sure, you can't, like, you know, when we got to Xavier, people like, you can't win. And I'm like, all right, I'm willing to take that risk. I'm probably a little further along in my career. I'm a little smarter too. I'm a little less desperate. And so like, I wanted to be able on paper, like define why I thought we can win here. And, you know, it's pretty easy for me. You've been here, right? Like, the resources are good. The facilities are good. Like, I think we have what we need, and if we don't, that like they're willing to listen about how do we get you there. You know, like you have to have a recruiting base in this part of the country. KU carries a lot of weight, right? So people around here love this place, and that's you know, like people like Xavier, but like there's another big school in town, right? And Ohio State was just up the road, and you go an hour or two south and there's Louisville and Lexington. You go an hour to west and there's Notre Dame in Indiana, and like we'll see, but I think we're like the big dog around here, you know. And and that certainly doesn't hurt in recruiting. And like it, in the end, a lot of this is about people. Like why we're going to win here, I think, is that the people that are going to be in our locker room, and you want to have that same kind of belief in sort of the leadership. And I remember getting off like my first Zoom with our athletic director, Travis Goff. And I think he was in Hawaii with the basketball team. And you know, those Zooms are usually,
was he on the beach when he did this with you?
I don't know. He might have a blurred background like you do. He's probably, there's probably Mai Tai next to him. I'm not really sure, but like, well, first of all, the search committee was like 9 people when it's usually like 4 or 5. And those introductory Zooms are usually like 30, 35 minutes. And it's hard because there's like another one coming, you know, and it just feels rushed. And I think we were on for like an hour and a half. And he, you know, was speaking to me for half that. And I got off and I told my wife, I'm like, man, this guy is like different and impressive. And then when I came here, you know, Jason Booker, who's our direct oversight, spent the whole day with me, and the amount of time he took out of his schedule and the amount of like detail he could go into, what really gave me a lot of, like, he answered every question, right? And then they plopped me down in Travis's office, and you know, he spent 80% of it talking about my family and how they were going to potentially fit in here. And I think he just has like a transformative effect on this department. And whether that's, you know, he was the dude who fundraised for $500 million for the Gateway Project, or $50 million for Allen Fieldhouse, or, you know, trying to fund this or that. But it's like, Sean, what do you do the first time he met you?
Jason or Travis?
Let's say Travis.
Travis gave me like a 10-minute hug. No, hold on. It was like within 10 minutes, he gave me like 9 different hugs.
Yeah, he dapped you up a bunch of times.
Did dap me up, hug me.
On your contract, he writes a personal message. And yeah, like, you know, not everyone does that.
Which I was like, is that even allowed? Like, I asked like three different people with like law experience. I was like, can they do that?
Well, cut this out if it's not allowed. So, but no,
I'm going to start doing it on future contracts. Like, I'm going to write a message back now.
Yeah, man, he's just that guy. And so, I don't know. I just think.
Well, even like I would add to that too. Like, I tell my wife about this all the time. I was out making hot chocolate one day. I'm not the coffee guy, so I drink the hot chocolate there. And he was having like a pretty like intense but it seemed like a very important conversation with somebody else, like right outside his office. And he kind of like saw me like walk by, said hello, whatever. I was making my hot chocolate, and he went back to his office. It wasn't a minute, and he came right back out, came over to me, and then talked to me for like 10 minutes. And I was like, you have way more important things going on. Like, whatever that conversation you just had, like, I do not need to be talking to you. Like, I think there's something you need to be working on. And like, to have like your athletic director, especially at a school like this, like, take that time out to like talk to you. And, you know, kind of same thing. Like, he'll, anytime he sees me, like, ask how my family's doing, ask how I'm enjoying it, ask how things are going. If there's, like, you know, if you don't like anything, tell me, like, we'll get it fixed. I'm like, I will give you a list later on. But like, he's like probably like my favorite athletic director. And yeah, I'd even throw Booker in this too. Like, the favorite guys that like I've ever had administrative wise, in my career, they're flat out awesome.
Yeah. And that matters, right? When you're thinking of picking up your whole family and turning your life upside down, you have to have belief in a lot of things. And honestly, the most important might be people, right? So yeah, no. And none of it's, you know, I've been here for whatever it is, 4 months now, and none of that was fake or just like, you know, a sales pitch to get you here. I feel it every day kind of through the department. And you know, now it's our turn to do our job and see if we can get things going.
That's awesome. Very, very cool. And like, for you, like, now that you have like kind of your plan and everything going into season, what are like maybe some of the more exciting parts of like this upcoming year going to be for you? Like, first full season, everything like that.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, everything. I think, trying to figure out how to do it together. And when we put together the rest of our schedule, right? So you have your conference schedule, which is a tough one. Yeah. And then you have a little bit, you know, we inherited some non-conference, and then you get to add some yourself. When I added a certain games, I must have like woke up on the right side of the bed. Like, the sun must have been shining, the skies must have been blue, because we take on some pretty tough teams, you know. So we added game at Brown, we added Gonzaga. Like, I'm probably missing one, but the reason we added them is like, hey, listen, if we're going to try to get into the NCAA tournament, scheduling matters. You got to schedule good teams, and you got to think about your RPI. And I have no idea if we have the right to think about the NCAA tournament in year one after, you know, a couple of years that haven't got close. But you got to believe, like, maybe back to the Ted Lasso thing, you know, I was maybe not the exact same verbiage, but like, that's the first thing I said is like, when I walked into my first team meeting at Xavier, I was like asking two things. Like, one is trust and the other is belief, right? And believe that we could be good. Cause they hadn't, you know, Xavier hadn't had a good year for 15, 20 years, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we're going to take some people on. I love being the underdog. Like, I was somewhat of like a miserable dude the last 3 years, when it's like, we were pretty good and we were supposed to win most games. And if you won them, it's like, okay, on to the next. There wasn't, and if you lost, it felt like the end of the world. I am excited to kind of flip that equation where, we're going to have to be able to endure some more losing. Like, you know, we lost 5 regular season games our last 3 years at Xavier. And so, like, I don't want to be satisfied or like content with losing, but it's going to become to some extent that we're not used to. But then those wins could be that much sweeter, and want to try to like hit new thresholds and have players. I think to answer your question, I think the thing I'm potentially most excited about, if we could find it, is have players feel pride and joy that they haven't felt yet, you know, here at KU. That's the stuff like that makes me emotional. Like, I remember all the championships, whether it was in Miami, UC, Xavier. The thing that was the most special is watching the players celebrate. you know, and they all celebrate in different ways. And so whether it's like running around the field and screaming, or whether it's just like silently like breaking down and crying, or whatever it may be, that's the stuff that I find fulfilling. And, you know, even if it's not championship or whatever it is, we're going to find a special moment, you know, and hopefully all of us will remember those for a long time.
My last big question, because I love that answer. Now that we have another staff member on the team, on the podcast, when you were building your staff, what were some of the things that you saw in each of your staff members that like made you want to hire them?
I can tell you on my side, nothing.
Well, obviously that's not the answer. No, it's the most important, like if we're going to say people, right? I have some potential strengths. I have for sure weaknesses. And I think one of the things is I'm just as aware of my weaknesses as I am my strengths. And so you want to create a staff with balance. You want to create a staff that has different strengths, you know, that you can actually leverage. So someone can have strengths. If you don't let them, you know, run in that particular lane, you're not going to see the best of them. I wanted people I knew. And so all four people, we interviewed and talked to people that I hadn't known before. And we thought about some seriously, but in the end, I hired four people I knew. And just kind of like different skill sets. So Tyler decided to come to Kansas the night I was offered and accepted.
Soccer Chat alum, Tyler. Soccer Chat alum. Yes. We had him when he was a young boy.
He's still a young boy, but he's a much more, he's an accomplished young boy. Ty is just an absolute stud. And I was offered this job when I was in recruiting in Tennessee, and we were staying at the same Airbnb. And he, like that night, he's like, dude, if you'll have me, I'm coming with you. And at the time, he was up for a head coaching position, a finalist, and I actually think was going to get it. And then potentially, you know, up for it at Xavier, he would have been for sure qualified for it. Right. And I'm like, why don't you take a night to sleep on it? And he's like, okay, but like, I'm gonna give you the same answer. And so then this is not an exaggeration. We were up the next morning and it was probably like 6 a.m. He's already watching film with KU. And I'm like, so you haven't changed your mind? He's like, no, dude, I'm in. And so that was just like incredibly empowering for me. He can, you know, by the end of his time at Xavier, like he can run any facet of this program. So hopefully he doesn't make me totally obsolete, but like if I'm not there, he's got it. And I know that. And so that was a great start, you know. Tiffany, I've known since almost day one of my coaching time. When I was at Miami as recruiting coordinator, she was at Dayton as recruiting coordinator and essentially going for the same players. And they won more of those battles than we did. They were very, very good back then. And when I got the job at Xavier, we only had one paid assistant, and she was my first call, like completely true story. And she was in Michigan, so I knew she was going to say no. But then she was the one who recommended Kelsey, who we ended up hiring. You know, she's now gone on to working at Michigan and LSU and like the national team. She's just was with the U-17s and U-20s. So just incredibly fortunate to get her. Daniel is like a great story. So is Tyler, of like, they both started as volunteers at Xavier. And so Daniel spent a year with us at Xavier. I feel very proud that like we helped him move on to Penn State. And he got a full-time position there and learned a ton off that like great group of coaches, Erica and Ann and Tim, and, you know, super fortunate that he believed in this kind of project. And then, yeah, I don't know, the last spot we just kind of flipped a coin and picked a name out of a hat, and Sean just like, yeah, like he just, no, Sean, man, I remember like we've known each other for quite some time, met through the camp circuit. And I always say like, man, to like young people, go work the camp circuit and find some people. And you guys are like living proof of what it can turn into. But yeah, we were on a field once and like just, chatted a lot throughout that time and always kind of like appreciated running into him. Like, couldn't help but see his social media presence, and the stuff he was doing at a bunch of schools, but at Brescia, you know, Sean is like, first of all, he's like the Pied Piper at those camps. Right. And so like, his team always wins, always wins. Like you could throw whoever you want with him and they're having the most fun. They're the loudest and they win. Right. And they win. I know like the last couple exact camps I went to, whenever they had to just kill time, Sean just boom, throw Sean up on the microphone in front of 400 people or whatever. And he felt super at home. You know, the stuff that you guys were doing, you're making waves in the community. And so like, you know, director of ops position, you can kind of go one of two ways. You can kind of just go like someone to check the boxes and someone who, you know, that's like their passion. And, or you can go to someone who, you know, talked to Sean. The first time I talked to him on the phone, I'm like, man, you don't have to do the non-glamorous stuff, right? The stuff that you might not want to. And he had a great answer. He's like, I do that all stuff right now. Plus everything else as head coach.
I was like, all I also, you and your entire staff plus ops is what I've been doing.
Correct. Correct. And so fair enough. That was a great answer. I still remember it. But I was like, also someone who can just provide value in so many different ways can increase the energy level, can be someone that the players can relate to. You know, he's out there hustling for us in camps right now. He's building a student support group. He's leading up to that. He's, you know, all these itineraries we're sending to the recruits. He's doing the social media stuff. And so just people who can add value, people you can trust, people who you would like to be around, and that are like in it together, right? Like who you got to sometimes just go into the bunker in the foxhole and like be willing to fight shoulder to shoulder. And I felt this was a group that can then model that sort of mentality to the players.
Love it.
It's so funny because like I felt like at the time, like the first time Nate and I talked, we were both kind of like in similar situations where it was like, you know, he wasn't really thinking so much about leaving. And the first time we kind of chatted about it, it was to clarify, the day Nate got the job, he and I were supposed to work a camp that following weekend. And yeah, so the person who was in charge of the camp was like, oh, great. Now I'm going to have to find another coach. So instead of the like, you know, hey, thanks, congrats, it was like, so you're not going to work camp. And he's like, oh, yeah, sorry. and then like 15 minutes later, I was like, congrats or whatever, I think was the text that I sent. But the thing that like, I'll never forget is sometimes I'll say things and my wife will be like, you're such an idiot. And I felt like one of the times where I said that or where I said something where she would have had that response was, I think our like first real discussion on the phone about it. I was recruiting in St. Louis and Nate called me and one of my good friends was with me, Jim Watts. And he was kind of like hyping me up all day. Like, Nate's going to call you at 12. Nate's going to call you. Like, you know, he was like, tell me what field you're going to be on at 12. Cause like, I want to be around when he calls you. And then like Nate sends me a text. Hey, can you talk at 11? Yeah, absolutely. I can talk at 11. And, you know, he made a comment and I just remember like, I didn't even think about what I was saying. And I just go, yeah, I'll be there tomorrow. Like I didn't drive to St. Louis, but like, I'll be there tomorrow. Like I'll figure it out. And Nate was like, well, don't do that. Cause I'm not in Lawrence. I was like, okay, like, cool. Like that's going to save me a trip. And like, you know, the next time I talked to Tyler, like he mentioned that same quote. He was like, you know, like, that's really cool that you said something like that. So I think on my end, like, you know, you want to be around people that you respect and that you enjoy and you want to learn from. And there's not too many, you know, I would say even in myself, like some of the opportunities I've been awarded, you know, are kind of very similar to this one. And it was just like, you know, I just don't feel it. I don't feel it. But there was something about, I think just my experiences with Nate in the summertime, or if I'd see him at a recruiting event or something, you know, never big time me like some of these stooges out here, you know, like just was always nice. Always said, hey, I think, you know, at least like a couple of exact camps, like one of the dinner nights, like we'd always like kind of sit at near the same table and whatnot. I don't think he's much of a karaokeer, like you and I, Nick, but,
oh, sir. Weakness, but, weakness.
Yeah. Weakness. That's why they brought me on was for the karaoke aspect. But you know, I think it's one of those things where like, I can remember the first time I talked to my wife about it. And she was just like, you know, she didn't know Nate, but she had heard the stories of the great Nate in our house. And was just like, you have to. And that was the thing for me was like, you know, he talked about the trust and the believing, you know, as an assistant, you know, that's what you have to do for a head coach. You have to trust him. You have to believe him. And I wouldn't be happier anywhere else than being with the DOGG every single day. He's also my Tuesday night wing partner as well.
You need Tuesday night wing partners. It's fun. It's Monday in Winona, but I totally understand.
Sean, Nick, just to let you know, very true story. So we did. We hit up, we'll give a plug to Jefferson's. We went on the west side one last night for boneless. And Sean decided to double up tonight for traditional bones. So back to back for Sean.
I mean, I'm a big wing guy. I saw you have three kids, I think I saw.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so I have my second one now, and so I have a almost 2-year-old and an almost 3-month-old, and so I've been more recently. My wife needs a break from the almost 2-year-old one, and so I take him out to wings. So we have like a little dad son wing night, and he just pounds popcorn and like the whole time because they have free popcorn there too. It's the best wing. You need your wing night, buddy. I'm glad you and Sean are like doing that in lieu of your family's getting there.
So when my family gets here, I hereby like on this podcast pledge to give Emily a night off, and I'll take Michael Grace and Josh to wing night and see how they do. Yeah.
Hey, remember kids eat free on Mondays.
Oh
yeah. I was like, there's gotta be a catch to this. Cause we're not afraid of a deal. Like Emily and I are frugal people. And if we see a deal, we'll go. So they better change that unless they want us to take advantage of it.
My guy, Josh, he's going to just destroy that place on Monday nights.
He's got a big appetite, little man.
He's also going to be the next Patrick Mahomes. Probably of soccer though. Like he's got like the Patrick Mahomes, like curly mullet going on. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Josh got this haircut that, is like a kind of a curly mullet, it's fair to say. And I think when he first got it, it was modeled after Mahomes. And then his touch up was meant to model Furphy here at KU basketball.
Okay.
So he's diving into all Kansas sports.
The so kind of like rounding out here in our time with you, you are now number 2 in soccer chat in people that I know who just run. And can run for, from what I've seen, a very long time. No one can surpass Nick, but you're pretty close to it. So I think one day I got to get you guys together, and I just want you to have a runoff and just see
we'll just go for a jog together, you know, at convention. I always go for a run midday, and Sean always laughs at me.
Yeah, we're at convention. Like, we've got a show at 8:00. Nick's up at like 5:30. He's like, oh, I'm going to go for a run.
Sweat out the booze from the day before, you know?
I wouldn't say I'm a runner, but like, if I could say like runners are communal, right? They don't need to race. They just like to build community. And for what it's worth, I think Tyler runs more than I do. He just does it. He's a maniac.
Closeted runner.
He wakes up at 4:30 in the morning. He's done with his run by 6. And I can't get up that early. My body doesn't respond that early. So I always have to do it kind of like, I always do it around training. So I'm not trying to, you know, but people see it. But Tyler's a pretty good runner himself there.
We'll make it a running community. We can get Sitch and Shannon. We'll go for runs too. Like we'll just make it a community at convention next year.
You guys tell me where you're finishing at and I'll be there.
Perfect. Meet us there.
I'll meet you at the, I'll get everybody's order for when you arrive. It'll all be there.
Love it.
We were kind of talking about this the other night. We do on the show, we always ask, you know, like, if you could describe your coaching philosophy with a song, what song would it be? But we had a different question. Our staff went to the baseball game the other night, and I think it was like right as Nate was walking up to us to sit down, I was kind of asking everybody, you know, like, what's your walk-up song like for baseball if you were getting ready to go up for a hit? So for you, like, what's that like, you know, we're walking through the tunnel at Rock Chalk Park for the first time, and they're like, all right, you know, Nate, you got to pick a song to walk out to. What are you picking?
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't – you know what the one that – like I love like Bob O'Reilly as a walkout song. I think that one's cool. Like Neil at UC had such a sweet walkout song that I'm going to steal at some point, the Arcade Fire Wake Up, you know, that song. But the song that for some reason, I think I like it 10 times better than everyone else, that like just hits some nerve in my body that pumps me up, is Modest Mouse, Float On.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in that generation. Like you're very much like in that generation of people that like would have been in your 20s, I think, like when that song came out.
Yes. There is something about it. Like even when I'm running, it's like, that's not a traditional great running song, but it probably kind of hits my adrenaline more than anything else. It was our walkout song my first year at Xavier. So Sean, you don't know this, but every year at Xavier, the team picked a song right before the game started, but I picked a song that they walked out the gate from And that was the first song from the first year. The first year at Xavier is Modest Mouse Lit On.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm excited. I feel the pressure, but we actually have like a proper awesome tunnel at Rock Chalk where like you can do like a professional walkout if you wanted.
That's pretty sick, Sean. What would be your walkout? Like you probably thought about this a lot as a wrestling guy.
Yeah. Well, even without the wrestling thing, we used it for our Casey and I's walkout at our wedding. We walked out to Living Color Cult of Personality.
That's a good one.
I've always said that's my ringtone. Like that is like, if I was somewhere and they're like, hey, like we're going to play a song for you to walk out to, like, that's what I'm going with every time.
I've recently, like, I would still go Regulate.
Well, there's the Nate Dogg.
I think I'd still go that, but like more recently, have any of you guys seen Creed 3?
Yes.
Yeah.
Last time I checked, like when he was walking out to that, like I watched that and like, I'm like, and he's the bad guy, right? But I'm just like when he's like, last time I checked, I can Nipsey.
He's also an incredible rapper, by the way.
Yeah, it's another hobby.
I think like, I don't know, like thinking about like Rock Chalk Park and stuff like that, I feel like just like an instrumental at the beginning of the next episode was just like the dun, 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 like that would just be, and then like as like they step onto the grass, ooh, it's the dun, 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 dun. Oh, like I'm seeing it now. I'm just like, I'm freaking out about it.
This is why you hired Sean. Like he's going to be turning about this for the next.
The thing is like months. Me and Sean are going to be like ready to run through a wall and the players will be like, what's this?
They'll be like, what the hell is this? I'm like, you know exactly what this is.
You don't know now, but you're going to find out.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
It's how you know you're getting old. Like when I first started coaching, I still shared like a decent amount of musical taste with the players. And now like I can't listen to their stuff and they can't probably listen to mine. So
100%.
But they're going to be listening to Float On. That's for sure. We're going
to
make that happen.
We're going to have to get them to like that song somehow.
How, if there's a coach that, you know, maybe wants to connect with you. I know you kind of went off the grid on social media a while back, but you know, always kind of gives me a heads up when I've done something, but how can people reach out to you if, you know, they want to maybe ask a question of you, or maybe if they know that you're going to be somewhere, they would just want to kind of chat with you. Cause it's kind of cool since I've been here. Like I know one of the last showcases you went to, a friend of mine was like, oh my gosh, like Nate's gonna be here. I was like, yeah, go say hi to him. And he was like, really? I was like, yeah, like just go say hi. So you're like, how can someone just like kind of reach out and say hey to you?
Yeah. That's for sure. Like, I know my place in the world and it's not very important. Do you know the story of how Tyler and I met?
I feel like he, cause I think we had him on right before he went to Xavier.
He heard me on Gary Kernan's podcast, maybe the first one I ever did.
Ooh.
And, Tyler, like he's Mr. Intentional. So he probably did this for a bunch of people, but he reached out to me and said, hey, you know, listen to it. He was at a point in his life where he was working a corporate job. And so like that part of my story resonated with him. And so we chatted for a while and, you know, he would keep in touch and I actually tried to get him interviews for jobs and this and that. And so, yeah, like that's how him and I met in the first time is he just, you know, reached out to me and, you know, like this today, like Sean was working harder than the rest of us. So he stayed behind, but the rest of us went to KC Current Training. And that staff there was kind enough to let us watch training. It was cool. Like, you know, one of the players at Penn State that Daniel just coached was there and a player that I've known since she was like little, like it's crazy watching them growing up. So it was cool anyway. But then afterward, head coach Vlatko, who, you know, like was pretty recently the head coach on the women's national team, comes over and, you know, says hello. He said hello before training. And I thought he was going to be like 2 minutes with us. And so I'm trying to rush in a question or two. And then it was like 5 minutes. And, you know, three times, I think either Daniel and I were like, all right, hey, thanks so much. We really appreciate your time. And he just kept hanging out, answering questions, asking us questions. He had known about us. And so my point was we were there for like, I don't know, a half hour with a guy who's in season, super busy, about to go back with his team and do video. And people he didn't really know, like he was super like gracious with his time. And I'd like to think that all of us, right? Like I happen to have this head coach title by my name now, but like I haven't had it for very long. I think all of us would be gracious with our time. If anyone ever thinks that's that it would be, you know, we can answer a question. To. Yeah. Yeah. So whether it's, if you see us out on the road, say hello, if it's dropping a text or an email, like we're, I think we're open to it, and I think we're pretty good about responding. So yeah, kind of an open invitation.
All right. As we close out here, one thing that we've started for 2024 on our show is closing it out with speaking it to existence. So give us your close. Speak something to existence that you want to happen in 2024.
Okay. I want my family to love living in Lawrence, Kansas.
I love it.
Yes. Yes. That is honestly like, that's a number one. I truly mean it. That's not like that, if they assimilate and transition well, it'll put me at ease so much. I'll try not to like dodge the question, you know, with KU soccer, I want every team or close to every team that plays us be like, I don't want to play that team again.
Hell yeah.
I don't know what results will follow. I care about results. I'm not pretend like I don't, but like, that's the identity I want us to inhibit like as soon as possible. And, you know, if people breeze through the games against us through the fall, I'm gonna feel like it was a disappointment. So I'm gonna try to speak that into existence. It'll be a pain in the ass to play.
Yeah, I like that's a t-shirt. I like that. I want that. All right. Well, Nate, again, you know, thank you so much for time. You talked about taking time out with us to chat here. You know, super, super busy with these last couple of weeks in the season. But you know, thanks so much for finally coming on the show with us. You know, it's great having you on and letting everybody else see, you know, what we knew of you and what so many others I've talked to that know you as well about, you know, how cool you are, how nice you are. Never heard anyone say anything negative about you. And I think people can tell that, you know, from the stories that you told us tonight. So thank you so much for coming on with us.
Yeah. Thanks, brother. Nick, great meeting you, man.
It's good meeting you too. In the same way that you and Becky Burley have the Mutual Admiration Society, I think that was me and Nate today. Like, we had it a little bit before we started recording, but I think that was my favorite part about meeting him is I had heard so many awesome things about him before ever getting the chance to meet him. And obviously, like, you're work for him now, but like, even before you worked for him, like, he was a name that was around our circles and it was completely justified. What an awesome, nice, great human being.
I told him too. I was like, I said, you know, you're a runner. It was funny because like the first practice that I attended, like we got done with it because Nate will typically run like right after training's done, and sometimes he'll do it before and after. But like the first time I saw it, I was like, is he running like a beep test? And like nobody could confirm what it was that he was doing. But it just like now it's just like it's one of those like creatures of habit. I think like I just expect like yeah he's like going to go on a run. So I told him, I know Nick runs for distance. I was like, but I would like to see, you know, the overall weekly space that you guys run per week. I was like, I may not be close. I was like, but you guys definitely run as much as anybody that I've ever met before. So I'm glad that there is a new chapter of the Mutual Admiration Society. I don't know what we can call it. Maybe like the Midwest chapter of it. I don't know, but
yeah, we could start different chapters for sure.
Yeah, you probably could give it your own name if you wanted to.
Yeah, I'll think about that over the next week.
But no, Nate's such a good guy. You know, and it's I made the comment about, you know, stooges, you know, at that level, and that's not Nate. Like, he's, you know, when I was chanting one of us, like, he literally is like one of us. You know, to hear about, you know, his background and, you know, I think he kind of gave you and I the tip is like, we need to go get a business office job for a couple of years and then like get back into coaching. And then we'll be good at it finally. You know, just to hear his story and like, I think I had known him for a while before I knew like that he had like just recently started. Cause he's just a couple years older than me. He's like, it's not like, I think it's like he would have been a senior my freshman year of high school, something like that.
Okay.
So it was kind of cool to like the first time I heard like, yeah, like, you know, he started off in the corporate world and whatnot, and then did, you know, the awesome stuff with the AmeriCorps and whatnot. And, then got into coaching. So it was just like a really cool, like, those are the stories I like hearing of how people got into coaching. Because, you know, we've had people on the show, and it's no disrespect to them, that I was like, yeah, like I played for this team, I played for this team, then I went to this league and played, and I became a coach. You know, we hear so many of those stories so often, but to hear that person, I was like, yeah, like I played and then I went and did this for a while. Then I was like, you know what? Hey, I'm gonna try this coaching thing, and got into it, and being as successful as he has been.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, and his success absolutely speaks for himself. Like, he's been unbelievable.
It's really cool to see him work. And it's so, like, I find myself when I watch our sessions is, you know, like when you're in the moment and like you're coaching your teams and whatnot, like you think, okay, like I wish I was able to do this with my program, or I wish I was able to do this, things like that. Like, you know, when you go watch other people and the way that like we do things at Kansas, I'm just like, I wish I had the ability to have done that at Brescia. And it was kind of like, I remember when I got to Brescia, I was like, okay, like this is how I want to kind of do things. And, you know, it just wasn't meant to be. But then like to come here and see like that's kind of how they do things, it's like, okay, like, yeah, like, you know, if I can get the opportunity to do something like this where it's like I can make it set up just like this, like I'm gonna be exactly where I wanna be at. And Nate is someone that, like, you know, he kind of mentioned it when we were talking to him. I can remember like when he finally like called me with like the actual offer. I mean, he asked me like four times, like, are you sure you want to do this? And not trying to like talk me out of it, but he was just like, are you sure this is what you want to do? And I was like, yeah, man. Like, I said directly, I was like, to come to learn from you, you know, whether it's, you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it may be, but to, like, to come and learn to see how you do things, because it's obviously worked. I was like, you know, that's something I think that's going to help me out. So maybe I'm a little biased in that, but, you know, and the other thing too is, yes, I've got a big network of people that are supportive, but the way that this guy supports me, and like, you know, he mentioned we had dinner last night, and we finally stopped talking about other sport, pro sports, for a while. And he was just, you know, like, what, he's like, I know I've asked you before, you know, where do you want to go? What do you want to do? Like, how can, you know, what can we do to get you there? What, you know, what can we get in your Rolodex, you know, to get you to where you want to go? And to, you know, to have conversations like that with people is just like, it's cool because it allows them to know like what you want to do. And I think that you could honestly kind of see like the wheels turn of like, okay, like here's what we could do here to like help him get to this spot. So I'm very, very, very thankful for him for giving me this opportunity that I never really thought would come, but here we are, you know? And and it's cool too, to like, I would say of our staff, like I definitely know him the most of them all. And I think that the moment for me where it really kind of clicked in was there was a weekend that he had to run back home for something. We had a recruit on campus, and like, okay, like, you know, who's going to do the close? And he was like, well, Sean's got head coaching experience besides me, you know? And I was like, oh, hey, he's right. So, you know, it's really cool, you know? And I think the thing is I don't know, like there's just sometimes like you're around people and like they just get you, you know? And I'm definitely a person that a majority of people don't get me. And like, I understand that, but like, I feel like he truly gets me. And like, I feel like that makes our working relationship what it is. Like, it's just like working camp with him. You know, we still have kind of the same relationship as we do now. So very, very appreciative. And I guess like he's definitely anointed himself as one of the good brothers. We can definitely throw that title on there for sure. So Nate, you are hereby dubbed, you know, one of the good brothers when it comes to soccer chat. Nick and I are just had a nice little 3 second silence staring to each other.
I'm sorry. I thought you were going one more thing. That's my head.
No. It's all right. I was going to see if there was something that you were going to throw in there on that one.
No, I mean, he definitely is one of the good brothers. And again, I am very, very excited to meet him next weekend.
Absolutely. Well, you know, as we said, this is Soccer Chat, and you know, we try to get you guys a show as often as we can, but you know, Nick's got two kids now, and I'm playing golf three times a week, because that's I told somebody the other day that I got and not heckled, I wasn't catcalled, but I found someone recognized me from work, saw me playing, and I was like, who? Oh, they're talking to me, and they're like, oh, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I'm here with my best friend. And they were kind of like looking around because I was by myself, like, who? And I was like, oh, the golf course. but uh, You know, it's one of the things where, like, you know, everybody's kind of in spring season starting to wrap up, but, you know, end of school is coming up here for a lot of people. So, you know, Nick and I will be giving you as much stuff as we can over the next few weeks. And I'm excited, you know, as I mentioned earlier, about the summer tour, getting that going. There's going to be some new faces that we're going to be seeing out on the summer tour that I can't wait to try to introduce you all to. But, you know, as always, you know, Soccer Chat, it's more than just a podcast. It's a way to connect with coaches. And if you want to talk to myself and Nick, you know, you can do so. Like, we're always going to respond. We'll always chat back with you. And Nick, you know, how can people get in touch with you if they just want to connect and say what's up?
Best place is at Coach N Rizzo. What about you?
Mine is at Coach Soderling. Did you change your Instagram to that as well?
No, I don't think so. I don't know my Instagram name.
It's like, I think it's like Nick W. Rizzo or something like that.
Okay.
Or yeah, Coach W. Rizzo,
I definitely don't know my Instagram name off the top of my
head. So we've done this show for about 7 years now. And I think I feel like I've always said, like, okay, like, your handles all have to be the same. Like, that's good branding.
That would be better branding. But yes, no, I definitely know my Twitter, which I didn't know when we started the show, which is,
hey, at some point we could have had him be like at the Red Hoodie, which I think you missed out on that. I'm sure it's still there.
Honestly, right now I'll go check.
Yes, please change both all of your accounts to at the Red Hoodie with THE in capital letters, and then everything else is in lowercase. But like, you know, like we said earlier, you can always follow along with us on Twitter and Instagram. You can also check out the podcast at Chat Soccer, SOCCR. You know, if you're brand new listening to the show, you know, definitely go back in our archives wherever you get your podcast from. There's some really good shows out there, whether they're from last year, the year before, or even when we started this show just almost 8 years ago, that you can go check out. You know, Nick, if somebody's new listening to this and they're like, hey, I've got to find one I want to go back and listen to, what one would you pick?
I would probably go the OG Becky Burley one. Was that our 100th episode?
It was the 100th episode, yeah.
I would go that one. What about you?
Oh, goodness. I would say probably, you know, I'm a fun guy. I would say the Best Friends episode with Kogut. And
that was a good one.
Oh, my gosh. I thought of it too quickly. Pat, yeah. Oh my God, he's gonna kill me for saying that. But to be honest, Pat's not listening to the show, so he's not gonna care. Nathan's probably gonna tell him. Nathan, please do not tell Pat I forgot his name. I would definitely say that one, because I feel like that was one where we just, like, you know, kind of let loose. You had, you know, four guys just kind of bantering and two friends just like going at it. But at the end of the day, that's the show that kind of got Nathan to where he was going to. Like, he mentioned, like, hey, this place is my dream job. And then he said that on our show, and then he got that job. Like, it was pretty cool how that happened. So I would say that would be the one that I would suggest. But as always, you know, we're always going to suggest that all your coaching accessories, go over to dutikbrand.com to check them out. Notebooks, educational books, pins, you know, you name it, hats, great neck sweaters, by the way. I still rock mine to this day. I absolutely love it. Great apparel as well for your coaching needs over at dutikbrand.com. Make sure to use the promo code SOCCERCHAT. Get yourself a sweet discount. And also, our good friends of the show who power us every single week is Exact Sports for the best ID camps in the country. Go check them out this summer all across the U.S. I've already got my flights booked. And your brother's getting some miles this summer, ladies and gentlemen. We are super, super excited about it. So go check them out at Exact Sports. See what camp is near you. Get signed up, because I know some of them are getting very close to being filled up. And you never know, you might see your boy there at the one that you are going to this summer. So go check them out at exactsports.com. Soccer Chat, like we said, it's more than just a podcast. It's more than people kind of hanging out on Twitter. It's a community. It's a family. And once you listen to it, once you kind of hang out and talk to everybody, you're already in and you're stuck. And you're going to find yourself learning so much more about it, whether you hop in a group text or you hop in like a big thread online. Just let us know using the hashtag SoccerChat whenever you are on Twitter, because we're never going to call it X. It will always be Twitter. He's Nick. I'm Sean. And the best part about this is that we get to do it all over again next week. Nick, we'll catch you later.
Catch you later, brother.